Hello. My name is Dr. Mercurio Arborea, and I am the founder of the Arborea Institute. Through our unique blend of benign pharmacology, sensory therapy, and energy sculpting, we can guide you to a new, better, happier you. You are about to embark on a great journey. Let the new age of enlightenment begin.
What is at stake is more than one small country. It is a big idea, a new world order.
It's no longer a theory. What I'm about to say is fact. The secret organizations of the world power elite are no longer secret. They have planned and are now leading us into a one-world communist government.
Welcome, useless eaters, to the Odd Man Out podcast, where we talk about hidden history, depolitical policy, occult deconstruction, economics, religion, and philosophy. I'm your rabbit hole aficionado, the Odd Man. Welcome.
The affirmative task we have now is to actually create a new world order.
Public policy could itself become the captive of a scientific, technological elite.
And when that first cocaine was smuggled in on a ship, it may as well have been a deadly bacteria so much as it hurt the body, the soul of our country. But take my word for it, this scourge will stop.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to another Oddcast featuring me, your Odd Man Out. I am so excited to bring you this show, and I'm so glad that you have taken the time to hang out with me and hopefully learn some new stuff that you can convey to others, or maybe just have rolling around in your mental Rolodex there in your head. And you never know, it might make for some good pub talk, some good coffee shop talk. Maybe at the holidays you can bring up this information to your family and your friends, and who knows where it will lead. And so I always want you guys to learn new stuff, and that's exactly what I'm hoping for this show. Now, this one is going to be a continuance of the history of the Bavarian Illuminati. This is going to be part three. You can go back and listen to part one and two, and the links will be in the show notes of this show. But I think that since the Illuminati continues to come up all the time, no matter if I'm looking at, well, the Order of Skull and Bones or Freemasonry or any other secret society for that matter, they almost always come up. So I wanted to continue this. I've been wanting to do this for a while, and so let's get right to it to see if we can learn some things that we didn't know, perhaps some things that most people don't talk about, and hope you enjoyed the show. Thank you. Now, we're going to be reading, first of all, from a book by Charles Heckethorn on secret societies from 1897. Yeah, this book is all about secret societies of the time, and mystics and different things like that. There's a volume one and two. It's pretty good. Both of them are pretty good. And I don't know how Heckethorn learned all this stuff. He was definitely favorable towards a lot of these groups, but I think he was able to bring some information to the table that perhaps other people kind of ignored and maybe still ignore. So we'll kind of look at his version of what he thought about the Bavarian Illuminati. And we will cover a few things that we've talked about in the past. Just kind of goes along with the territory. You kind of got to do that. And it's also good for those who haven't listened to the other two episodes. So let's get right down to business here. Now, Heckethorn says that the Illuminati, the name of the Illuminati, has frequently been adopted by various sects. The end of the 16th century saw the Alumbrados in Spain, and in 1654, the Guaranets were founded in France, both societies of visionaries and ghost seers. Ghost seers, now let's think about that. I've talked about the Fabian Society in regards to the Illuminati, the Bavarian Illuminati, and it kind of seems to me like with their reading societies and their goals, the Fabian Society was a continuation of the Illuminati, whether they were a direct continuation whether it was a purposeful thing or not, certainly they had some of the same goals, many of the same goals. And so you see the Ghost Seers there. And well, the Fabian Society was put together by two of the members who were actually ghost hunting at the time when they decided to form the Fabian Society. Now, let's look deeper. In the second half of the last century, there was an association of mystics existing under the name in Belgium. Other fraternities calling themselves Illuminati and formed in more recent times will be found mentioned in this work. But he says, the society of which I am about to speak is the best known of all the Illuminati orders. Foundation of the order, Adam Weishaupt, a student at the University of Ingolstadt in Bavaria, learned and ambitious and attracted by the love of mystery, which is a prominent characteristic of youth, meditated the formation of a philosophical sect. When 22 years of age, he was elected professor of canon law in that same university, a chair which had for 20 years been filled by the Jesuits. Hence, their rage against and persecution of Weishaupt, which he met boldly, returning hatred with hatred and collecting partisans. Now, that's one of the things that the Illuminati are famous for, is their hatred or their rivalry against the church and organized religion, which they did have some credibility with that, of course. But a lot of these groups always take things too far, and so did they. And let's read on. The great aversion he then conceived for the Jesuits appears in many of the statutes of the order he founded. Jesuits, he often declares, are to be avoided like the plague. The sect of the Illuminati was founded in 1776 by Weishaupt, who adopted the pseudonym Spartacus, but it was years before its ritual and constitution were finally settled. Weishaupt, in order the better to succeed, connected himself with the Freemasons by entering the lodge Theodore of Good Counsel of Eclectic Masonry at Munich and attempted to graft Illuminism onto Freemasonry. Many members of the craft misled by the construction of his first degrees. Now, before we go on, at the bottom, Heckethorn has in the notes talking about the Alumbrados of Spain. Suspected of being one of these Alumbrados, Ignatius Loyola, the founder of the Order of the Jesuits, was for nearly a month imprisoned in the dungeons of the Inquisition at Salamanca after the Holy Fathers had perused his Spiritual Exercises manuscript. They considered him harmless and let him go. It says, many members of the craft, misled by the construction of his first degrees, entered the order, but when they found that Weishaupt meant real work and not mere play, they hung back. The society was instituted for the purpose of lessening the evils resulting from the want of information, from tyranny, political and ecclesiastical. He goes into the organization of the society. He says it was by its founder divided into classes, each of which again subdivided into degrees in the following manner. The first main class is the nursery, and you had the preparation, the novice, the minerval, and the illuminatus minor. Then in the masonry degree, you have first symbolic, apprentice, fellow craft, master mason, illuminatus major, or Scotch novice, and then there's a second part to that, Scotch, Illuminatus Dirigen, or Scotch Knight. Then in number three, you have the Mysteries degree. Under the Mysteries, you have the Epopt, or Priest. You have the Prince, or Regent. You have the Magus, or the Philosopher. And in that same degree, under the Greater, you have Rex, King, Hom Roy, or Areopagite. I'm not sure if I said that last word correctly, but that is the way it's pronounced when I listen to these books on tape. Now, in the nursery and masonry degrees, the candidate was merely tried and prepared for the mystery degrees. If he was found unreliable, he was not allowed to go beyond. But if he proved an apt scholar, he was gradually initiated in the latter. where all that he had been taught before was overthrown. Now, this is much like modern Freemasonry in the Scotch Rite. And we've read that in numerous quotes by Freemasons like Albert Pike. I'll read that again. But if he proved an apt scholar, he was gradually initiated into the latter, where all that he had been taught before was overthrown, and radical and deistic theories and plans were unfolded, which were in no wise immoral or subversive of public order, but only such as at the present day are held by many men of just and enlightened views. He goes on, now the initiation into the priest degree, the candidate for the priesthood, the first degree in the lesser mysteries, was taken with his eyes bandaged in a carriage, following a roundabout way to a house where the initiation was to take place. On his arrival, there his eyes were unbandaged, and he was told to put on the apron of the Scotch knight, the cross of St. Andrew's, and the hat, take the sword into his hand, and wait before the first door till summoned to enter. After a while, he heard a solemn voice calling, "Enter, orphan, the fathers call thee, and shut the door behind thee." I want to stop real quick and say that this whole idea of bandaging or blindfolding the eyes, we know that that happens also in Freemasonry, but I do remember, if I'm not mistaken, I think it was Lux, who used to be the former co-host of Occult Rejects, and he said that when he entered the Order of the Golden Dawn, I believe that he said they bandaged his eyes and put him in a car and took him somewhere, if I'm not mistaken. Back to it. "Enter, orphan, the fathers call thee, and shut the door behind thee." On entering, he beheld a room, the walls of which were covered with rich red hangings, and splendidly illuminated. In the background stood a throne under a canopy, and in front of it a table on which were placed a crown, scepter, sword, valuables, and chains. The priestly vestments were displayed on a red cushion. There were no chairs in the room, but a stool without a back stood at some distance from the throne facing it. The candidate, on being introduced, was told to choose between the things on the table or the vestment on the cushion. Should he, contrary to all expectations, declare for the crown and its concomitants, he would at once be expelled. But if he chose the priestly dress, he was addressed with, "All hail, thou noble one," and invited to take a seat on the stool and listen to the explanation of his future duties, which, as intimated above, were simply to act as an instructor of the uninitiated. The lecture being ended, a door at the back was opened, and the friend who had introduced the candidate entered into the priest's dress, which consisted of a white woolen toga, descending to the feet and neck, and sleeves were edged with scarlet silk ribbons. A silk girdle of the same color encircled the waist. The deacon alone had, moreover, a red cross about a foot long on his left breast. The candidate was led into the inner room, the door of which had in the meantime been opened, and in which was seen the altar covered with red cloth. Above it hung a painted or carved crucifix. On the altar itself were placed the book of the ritual, a Bible bound in red, a small glass dish with honey, and a glass jug with milk in it. A burning lamp hung over the head of the deacon who faced the altar. The priest sat on both sides, on red cushioned benches. The candidate was admonished and promised to renounce the enemies of mankind, evil desires, the spirit of oppression and deception. Having done this, he was divested of his Masonic clothing, and having promised in presence of the crucifix to be faithful to the order, the assistants put on him the priestly dress, and then let him eat some of the honey and drink some of the milk, as a sealing of their covenant. Now, I want to say that isn't it interesting that they use the color red? Now, maybe this is nothing, but, you know, just a few decades later, we have the communists and their color red, and we call them the Reds. And, of course, we know that May Day was really a tribute to Weishaupt starting the Bavarian Illuminati on May 1st, 1776. So I think that could be a connection there, or at least maybe a tribute to the Bavarian Illuminati and what they stood for as far as overthrowing governments and taking over. Of course, half the time you hear people talk about how they were not going to do that, but it's pretty evident that's what they wanted to do, maybe peacefully by infiltration, again, much like the Fabian Society and Fabian permeation. Slow and steady wins the race like the turtle. Now, as we continue, the priest sign was laying both hands in the form of a cross flat on the head. The grip, you know, this is the Mason-style grip, handshake or whatever. The grip consisted in presenting a fist with the thumb held straight up. The other one would make a fist, pressing it on that presented to him, but so as to enclose the vertically presented thumb. The word was I-N-R-I, which was said to be at the top of Christ's cross, but the Kabbalists have a different idea of what that meant, like they do everything, probably several different ideas of what that meant. But then it goes on to say, then followed a long lecture of a moral and scientific character. Then we get to the initiation in the regent degree. This degree was conferred on only such persons as by high intellectual attainments, social position, and tried fidelity, and were considered capable of advancing the objects of the order. The place of reception consisted of three different rooms. Of course, we talk about Kabbalah, and I was just reading how they equate levels of the Kabbalah with rooms. Maybe that's not connected, but in the last room, there stood a raised, richly decorated red throne under a canopy for the provincial. To the right stood a white column about 7 feet high, on which was placed a crown resting on a red cushion. Suspended from the column were a shepherd's crook of white wood and an artificial palm branch. On the left hand stood a table with a red cover, on which were placed the garments of the regent. It says it had a red cross on it, and over this was worn a white cloak with another red cross embroidered on it. The collar and cuffs were red. The regents wore all tall white hats with red feathers and red-laced half-boots on their feet. The cross on this cuirass was of the provincial, and it was irradiated with golden rays. The room was hung with red and well lighted up. The provincial alone occupied it, seated on the throne. The other regents were in the middle of the room. The first room was set aside for preparation. It was hung with black, and in its center on a platform stood a human skeleton, at whose feet lay a crown and a sword. Of course, this reminds us of the initiation for the Order of Death, the Order of Skull and Bones. Candidate was led into this room. His hands were tied, and he was left alone for a little while, during which time he could hear the conversations carried on in the middle room. He would overhear things like, "Who has brought this slave hither? He came and knocked. What does he seek? Freedom. He beseeches you to free him from his bonds. Why does he not apply to those who have bound him? They will not set him free. His servitude benefits them. Who has made him a slave? Society, the state, false religion. Does he respect persons? Ask him who was the man whose skeleton he sees before him. Was he a king, nobleman, or beggar?" Of course, again, Skull and Bones. "He does not know. He only knows that he was a man like one of ourselves. He wants only to be a man. Then let him be introduced." The candidate was then brought into the middle room, and finally into the last room, and after some more catechizing, invested with the dress of the regent. The sign was the holding out of both arms towards a brother, the grip taking hold of his elbows as if to support or raise him up. And the word was Redemptus. Now we finally get to the greater mysteries. The greater mysteries, with their two degrees of Magus and Rex, were never worked out by Baron von Deniggi, but according to statements found in the writings of Weishaupt, the Magus degree was to be founded on the principles of Spinoza, showing all to be material, God and the world, one and all religions, human inventions. The second, or degree, of the Homo Rex taught that every peasant, citizen, or father of a family is a sovereign and is in patriarchal life, to which all mankind must be brought back, and that consequently all state authority must be abolished. Weishaupt never intended these degrees to become known to anyone but the most trustworthy of his followers, but the discovery of his correspondence and secret papers revealed also this part of the scheme. It's pretty neat in this book. See, this is page 309 of Heckethorn's book here, and he's got the Bavarian Illuminati cipher. They had a word cipher basically based on the Kabbalistic idea of Gematria, or that may even predate Kabbalah in the modern sense, but certainly Gematria came out of Jewish mysticism. Now, it says here, the nomenclature and secret writings of the order. The most important person of the order after Weishaupt was Baron Deniggi, who assumed the pseudonym of Philo. All the leading members equally adopted such pseudonyms. Thus, we have seen that Weishaupt took the name of Spartacus, who in Pompey's time headed the insurrection of slaves. Member Zwack, a lawyer, was known among the initiated as Cato. Nikolai, a bookseller, as Lucian. Professor Westenrieder, as Pythagoras. Canon Hertel, as Marius, and so on. The place whence the members wrote to one another were also designated by fictitious names. Thus, Bavaria was called Achaia. Munich was called Athens. Frankfurt on the Main became Thebes. Heidelberg, Utica, and so on. The brethren dated their letters according to the Persian era, called after the king who began to rule Persia in 632 before Christ, and the year began with them on the 21st of March. They corresponded till initiated into the higher degrees in cipher, which consisted in the numbers corresponding to letters. And then it gives the order, which I won't bore you with. You just have to look at that with your eyes. It goes on. When admitted to the higher degrees, they used either one or the other hieroglyphics shown on page 309, which is the previous page. The order made considerable progress, including among its members, priests, prelates, ministers, physicians, princes, and sovereign dukes. No doubt, few of them were initiated into the higher degrees. The Elector of Bavaria became alarmed at the political tenets betrayed by some of the brothers of the order, and at once suppressed it in all his territories. And we know that there were several edicts that went out before it was, you know, before they got super serious and were basically threatened to be beheaded if they did not break up the order. And that's when, I believe, there's pretty clear evidence, they decided to kind of go off into reading societies and really become more about education. And of course, that relates right to the Fabian Society as well, because that was one of their main goals. And that's one of the main goals of all these nefarious or semi-nefarious societies. And so they want to free us from organized religion, yet they are organizations themselves. So who will free you from them? That's the problem, right? So we get into the secret papers and correspondence. Now, it says it was only after the suppression of the order that the mode of initiation into the higher degrees and the true doctrines taught therein became known. A collection of original papers and correspondence was found by illegally searching the house of Zwack in 1786. In the following year, larger collections were found at the house of Baron Bassus, a member. From these we learn that one of the chief means recommended by the leaders of the success of the order was that of gaining over the women. Not a bad plan, and not objectionable, says Heckethorn, when the aim is good. There is no way of influencing men so powerfully as by means of the women, says the instructor. These should therefore be our chief study. I think we've mentioned this before. We should insinuate ourselves into their good opinion, give them hints of emancipation from the tyranny of public opinion. In standing up for themselves, it will be an immense relief to their enslaved minds to be freed from any one bond of restraint, and it will fire them the more and cause them to work for us with zeal. Similar views are enunciated in a letter found among the correspondents. The proposal of Hercules, a member not identified. Now, I don't know if he has been identified since then. He could have been mentioned in the Perfectibilists, but let's go on. To the establishment of a Minerval school for girls is excellent, but requires circumspection. We cannot improve the world without improving the women. How will their mothers, immersed in prejudices, consent that others shall influence their education? We must begin with grown girls. Hercules proposes the wife of Ptolemy Magus. I have no objection. I have four stepdaughters, fine girls. The eldest in particular is excellent. She is 24, has read much, and is above all prejudices. They have many acquaintances. It may immediately be a very pretty society. No man must be admitted. That's sexist, dude. Do you think that they would, in freeing these girls of their prejudices, do you think that they would approve of them showing their buttholes on TikTok like we have in the modern era? Total freedom. But anyway, I digress. Okay. Let's see, where did I leave off here? Oh, yes. No man must be admitted. This will make them become more keen, and they will go much farther than if we were present. Keen is one of those words you don't hear that much. Man, this is so keen. Like in the 50s, that was a cool word, right? Leave them to the scope of their own fancies, and they will soon invent mysteries which will put us to the blush. They will be our great apostles. Ptolemy's wife must direct them, and she will be instructed by Ptolemy, and my stepdaughters will consult with me. But I am doubtful whether the association will be durable. Women are fickle and impatient. Nothing will please them but rushing from degree to degree, which will soon lose their novelty and influence. To rest seriously in one rank, and to be silent when they have found out that the whole is a cheat, is a work of which they are incapable. Nay, there is a risk that they may take it into their heads to give things an opposite turn, and then, by the arts in which they are adepts by nature, they may turn our order upside down. It's kind of funny, right? I'm kind of putting mind of the Order of the Eastern Star, or even co-masonry, which is male and female, but let's go on. In a circumstance affecting the personal character of the founder, which was brought to light by the discovery of the secret correspondence, but, as Heckethorn says, and I think he's making an excuse for them, but he says, but it was totally unconnected with the principles advocated by the order, and contributed as much as anything else to give the Order of the Illuminati a bad name. Another circumstance was taken advantage of by the enemies of the order to crush it. In the handwriting of member Zwack were found a description of a strong box which, if forced open, should blow up and destroy its contents. A recipe for sympathetic ink. How to take off impressions of seals so as to use them afterwards as seals. A connection of some hundreds of such impressions with a list of their owners. A set of portraits of 85 ladies in Munich, with recommendations of some of them as members of a lodge of sisters of the Illuminati. Injunctions to all superiors to learn to write with both hands and to use more than one cipher in other matters. Now he kind of goes on a tirade about John Robison, of course his book on the proofs of conspiracy, and of course he's saying basically that Robison was full of crap. But I think that Robison, the book is great for that matter, and he was a learned guy who was also a Mason. Did he stretch the truth a little bit? That's possible, but I think that Abbé Barrel's information is even harder to disagree with. Now, he says that of the German Society of the Illuminati, it may truly be said that it was before its time. All enlightened nations now adopt and advocate its aims. But it was not without its influence on the French Revolution, and it may have inspired Barth with the idea of the German Union. And I thank you for taking the time to listen to this. I hope that you've got something out of it, and I hope it's something that you can share. Now, I want to get straight to thanking my patrons. If you want to become a supporter, you can go to patreon.com/theoddmanout and become a helping, supporting member. I want to thank Christopher, I want to thank KF, Cole, Ashley. Thank you to that crazy bread man for being a covert co-conspirator. Thank you, Aaron. Thank you, Ruckus, from the Daily Ruckus, from alternatecurrentradio.com, as well as TNT Radio. Thank you for being a producer of the show, Ruckus. Thank you, No Evil Shall Fear. Thank you, Mark, from Housatonic Live. Thank you, James. Thank you, Bill S., for being a producer of the show. Thank you, John Brisson, from We've Read the Documents, for being a covert co-conspirator. Thank you to the Mighty Kilowatt. Thank you, Sir Tim of the Tunnels. Thank you, Aaron. Thank you, David. And thank you, Jack Allen, from Conspiracy or Just a Coincidence. Get on over there and check out Jack's content on all your fine podcasting platforms. And last but not least, I want to thank alternatecurrentradio.com, my podcasting family. Get on over there and check out all their fine talk and music shows as well. And check out my friend Hesher Brian on State of the Union on TNT Radio. I'll be talking to you soon. Cheers and blessings. And remember, their order is not our order. See you guys.